Hello, I'm Mrs. Babcock, who loves to be taken in the library, Dylan Gaiman.
And I'm a shiksa, that's more expensive than a tchotchka, and I'm ready to chat your ear off. Mazel tov!
And who are you?
Trix Mix!
This is the Nanny and Niles pod, where one gay man and his best girl rewatch the 1993 show, The Nanny, one episode every week. Okay, so the synopsis and the summary are both provided by IMDb. IMDb. Or is it IMBD? IMDb, right?
I don't know. I have a drink. I don't even know what
they're
saying.
It says, the synopsis is, door-to-door cosmetic sales lady Fran Fine inadvertently becomes the nanny to the three children of a worldwide widowed Broadway producer.
Wow.
And today we're doing my signature cocktail for the pilot episode, which is the Nanny Cosmo. So I basically took a regular Cosmo, which is vodka and orange liqueur and lime juice and cranberry juice. And instead I just did cherry lime vodka instead of regular vodka. And that's just the fruity fantabulousness that is given to us by Nanny Fine.
And this drink is fine. It's so good.
I'm glad you like it. It's so my first time ever making it, specifically for this night, the pilot. I don't know if every one of my drinks are going to be like first time ever type thing, but I'm going to try as much as I can to just come up with something brand new.
The fact that I sipped it down, I mean, so fast, and I'm a lightweight, I'm pretty much screwed, but this is great. That's what I need.
It is a Witzel Schwung.
It's great. And then the signature snack is actually, I ended up doing two things because I'm trying something new with this crab ragoon egg roll. And I would say, you know, it's nice and crispy. I love it. I like the way it turned out. I think I need to tweak it a little bit. And I think it fits the theme because it's Flushing, Queens, New York, Chinese food. Love it. And then the other dish is a pork chorizo and shrimp fried rice. And that was delish. And it's just kind of sweet and salty, everything you need. And it paired perfect with the Nanny Cosmo, I have to say. Because it's just like you get this refreshing alcoholic beverage. And then you have the egg roll that's crispy and the pork chorizo and shrimp.
I would say the chorizo and shrimp fried rice is probably my favorite. Like, you don't usually get a combination for fried rice. You get, like, pork fried rice, shrimp fried rice.
Yeah.
You know, and this, like, combination is, like, so freaking good. I mean, I'm always a fan of chorizo.
So you'd like to say you like sausage?
I like sausage. I like the sausage. I admit it now. I'm admitting it now and forever.
Well, that's a common ground.
Okay, so we're going to start out with the beginning of the episode where Fran Fine and Val, her best friend from high school, both work at as sales girls in a bridal shop in the Flushing neighborhood of Queens. The shop operated by Fran's long-term pre-engagement high school boyfriend, Danny. So first of all, they have some girl that's trying on a bride's dress because she's about to get married, and she's like pregnant because she's like, oh, how soon is the baby? And she's like, oh, it's like whatever time frame. So like they're like, it's very insinuated that they're about to get married just because she just got pregnant.
Yeah, that was honestly just life's lesson right there. I mean, I love that it started like that, because to see Fran act in that environment and just how she's kind of, I don't know, I find her kind of like soothing in her own way, because she's like kind of, you know, this bride's like, you know, she kind of interacts with them like as if they're, you know, friends already, you know, I like that.
It's like very subtle, but very funny at the same time. And then, she's like bagging on her boyfriend Danny, and he was like, what do you want me to do? She's like, I want you to put a ring on it.
But I like the contrast of like the bride consultant, but just like never being a bride. You know, that's gotta be like, I feel like all of us can, you know, some people out there could probably identify with that, because imagine, you know, always being the bridesmaids, but never being the bride. So you're just kind of, you know, it's like that torture of just watching someone, you know, get ready for their special day, and you're, you know, you're waiting for your special someone, you know? I mean, did you ever feel like that in your life?
I think, like, there was definitely a point where, not exactly, like, weddings, but I remember being in the, in the club scene back when I was younger, and always being like, wow, everyone's finding someone else, but I'm just, like, here dancing just around everyone, and it's fine, you know, I'll help you find your lover, and I'll just wait for mine to show up one day.
I feel like for me, it was, like, I always thought I was gonna get married at 30. I was just gonna be, like, I'm not getting married anytime soon. I need to have everything in place first. But then I got married at 20. Mm. Can you believe that? But her signature laugh, though, that's what got me. Because I said, this is like, you know, this is her. Mm-hmm. So I kind of really love the signature laugh. I feel like that was something that was going to stick for a while. And also for me, what stuck out was the breakup in the bridal shop and getting fired at the same time.
Yeah, so it says, things change when Danny dumps Fran for their high school friend, Heather, and also fires her, and he wants to give Fran's sale job to Heather as well. And it's just like such a double whammy. I mean, this dude's obviously a total... I mean, I'm thinking, like, how profane do I want to be on this podcast?
He was a tool, let's face it. I just, you know, I'm sure, like, you know, he had, like, that little, like, bad boy, like, oh, you know, attractive, like, feel. But, you know, he's clearly, you know, he doesn't care.
And, he was just so nonchalant about it.
Yeah. He's
like, oh, by the way, I don't want to get married. I'm not proposing to you. I'm actually leaving you, and I'm taking your job and giving it to the person that I'm currently trying to date.
I mean, if that's not crappy, I mean, I don't know what else, you know, to say. I mean, honestly, have you ever had... What was the worst breakup? I feel like...
Oh, gosh.
Honestly, I feel like I was always hot. I think I was the one who would always either cheat or mm-hmm. do something crazy to my ex-boyfriends. Or just... Not even crazy. I would just be like, I'm over it. I'm done. I was a very practical dater. I would say I was a Virgo dater. I was like, you know what? You can't do anything for me. I'm done with you. Like, and it was really quick. I didn't really harp on anyone too fast. I mean,
I guess my worst breakup was probably the guy went to New York for the weekend, and then he sent me this long text about how he wanted to break up with me. And I was like, this is so out of the blue, and you're going to break up with me, like, through text. And we were living together at the time. So I was like, it was just really freaking awkward.
How do you even... So how did you guys, like, split up your things and...
Well, I mean, we haven't been living together very long, so it was easy for us to, like, know who's what. Basically, he like, moved into my apartment. So, like, everything was, like, mine, except for, like, little things here and there that was his. So
you could just, like, grab his, you know, belongings and kind of just, like, buy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I mean, you know what? I would have found that, you know, satisfying. Like, that scene on Waiting to Exhale when Angela Bassett just basically takes everything and just, like, puts it in this, like, little wagon, and she wheels it out on the driveway and, like, lights it up and puts it on fire. I mean, that's nothing more satisfying than that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I really stayed into, like, my husband now is the one I've been with for the longest, and I think he was my longest relationship even, because we were together for a year. But I think over a year before we got married. But breakup wise, honestly, oh my God, I think I did something, the one time I did something really bad, it was, I basically was dating this guy, and I was like, I'm over it, he's a bum. I think I paid for his cell phone bill. I never got the money back, but I was like, I'm so done with you, I can't. So I didn't even tell him that I was, like, gone. I just started seeing this other guy, and I remember dating this guy. He was, you know, he was Portuguese, and I was, like, all about him. And then all of us, like, we were in the car talking, and I think my phone was going off, And it was just vibrating. And it was my boyfriend at the time, who had no idea that I was going to break up with him. And the guy I was dating at the time was like, what is that? And I was like, oh, it's nothing. You know, it's just a phone call. You know, so yeah, that's how I did that. So that was a little dirty, but you know, we live and we learn. And how old was I? I was probably a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah, all my relationships were pretty much 3 month max. And then my current relationship is the longest one that we've been together for 7 years.
Look at that.
Not married yet, but it's going to happen eventually.
It's there.
So her little snippet about like, you can't fire me, I quit. Never mind, you are going to fire me because I want unemployment.
That was the smartest thing, though.
So we go into the theme song, and in the lyrics say, well, everyone else is wearing tan, but none of the cartoons are wearing tan.
Yeah.
They're all in blue shirts, blue jackets, and gray pants. No one's wearing tan.
Yeah, I mean, either way, I think, you know, they got that, like, oh, everybody's boring and she really has to shine. I think they really made her like the centerfold of this, you know, which obviously she is, you know, the main character. But I just love that they made an emphasis on that, because everything about her was just like, ah, because I think they really wanted to capture the audience with this character. Like, how are we going to draw everybody in? And honestly, I love that she represented this kind of just unpredictable, just funny, like loving character. And she's kind of this like motherly figure to these kids. So I love that you know, that was like the center of it. She really came off bright, and just even the fashion and what she was wearing, you know, throughout the show was great. So...
So then after the theme song, Fran decides to try selling cosmetics door to door. The first house she knocks on is the widower and Broadway theater producer Maxwell Sheffield. And this is where our characters, our like doppelganger characters, first meet, because I'm like the Niles, yes. And you're the nanny, you're Fran.
Yes.
So we meet for the first time at the door.
I love their dynamic already, because off the bat, you're just going to know that these two are going to be the it characters that's going to carry the show. I mean, obviously, you know, the kids are cute, you know, and you know, all the characters, I think, are very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. But that first meeting with Fran and Niles was just kind of like, I mean, his sarcasm and then her character. It's almost like you and me, really, if you think about it. Because I'm, you know, I'm motherly, I'm loving, but then I'm crazy and you just, like, don't know what to do with me half the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're, like, calm and collective and you're very supportive with things. You're very reliable. And then you kind of just take life and, like... you're like, oh, like these things are not going to bother me. And you always have a witty answer to things and that sarcasm, and it catches me off guard and I love it, because I'm just like, oh, that was clever. That was really clever. And I think that's how I learn to deal with life sometimes. And I think a lot of us can learn that, because it's like, we can't let every little thing, you know, bother us. Or if it is a big issue, you know, you have to kind of be witty to get through it all, you know?
Like, he's very obvious about how he feels about, you know, what the family is doing, and him dating or not dating the CC character. Really, it's, like, very unclear about that situation. Because, like, he introduces her as his, like, business partner. But then, like, there's all these references that, like, they're dating.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess it's a very, like... nonchalant situation at this point. They really haven't yet pinpointed an actual label.
Yeah, and you're kind of just watching everything like, okay, who is this? We're talking about CC now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was like, ooh, she's gonna be that character that you're kind of gonna like cringe. And then I'm sure there's people out there that are like, no, she's misunderstood. Like, I maybe understand where she's coming from, you know, or maybe she's very lonely and she's successful and she has yet to focus on her love life, you know? But she only has eyes for Sheffield.
So Niles, the Sheffield proper but quick-tongued English butler, mistakes Fran as the new nanny for Maxwell's three problem, quote-unquote, children. Shy teenager Maggie, precious preteen Brighton, and angst-ridden adolescent Grace. And there's this reference to the last nanny that left in a flea because I guess Brighton was pretending to commit suicide with ketchup, which yeah. with Niles says ketchup.
I mean, honestly, it's, I feel like this scene itself was just going to show really like how much attention these kids needed. Like, this was going to be a job for Fran, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, Maggie, she's, you know, she's the cutest. She's adorable. And you're kind of like, you know, oh, she's impressionable. And then Brighton, you know, he's 10 years old and he's out there and he's being silly and he's pranking people. I mean, that's going to be obviously a curveball as well. But then Grace, you like see Grace. And I feel like every teenage girl can relate to that. Or every teenage gay boy can relate to that.
Well, I think you mean Maggie. Maggie's the 14-year-old. Oh, Grace is the little girl.
Oh, I got them mixed up.
And she goes to therapy and she says, my therapist took me back through my childhood. And Fran says, must have been a quick trip.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, and you know what? It's crazy because therapy, you know, it's like my daughter has therapy, you know, she's very high functioning, you know, she has autism and it's like, it's, you know, it's therapy. A lot of it is like frowned upon. It's something that's always like, oh, if you need therapy, oh, that's a big, you know, big mm-hmm. issue. And like, oh my gosh. But really therapy is like managing, you know, your feelings and talking about them and venting to a person that's not biased or has no idea, you know, of everything else in your life. You're just talking about that situation. So like that part, that when that happened for me, mm-hmm. I was like, when I saw that, I was like, wow, you know, it really is highlighting just, you know, this, it's like they made it funny.
Yeah.
But these are like real life serious things. Yeah. And I think that's what I like about this show really so far. Even just seeing that, you're like, oh, you know, three kids, that's a lot, but it's mm-hmm. almost like one of each of whatever issues you may be dealing with.
Yeah.
And they kind of did that within like 5 minutes, not even.
Yeah. There's definitely a stigma when it comes to therapy, but it's just, they put it in such a funny way because she's such a young girl.
Yeah.
And she just takes herself way too seriously.
I love that.
It's really hilarious. And then obviously you were saying that like Fran knows like what she's doing and she's like not bothered or scared away by these kids. So when he comes out with the knife in his stomach with probably more ketchup on his shirt, she just like not even bothered, not even fazed.
Yeah. I mean, she's, I think she even made a comment, didn't she, when he was like playing dead?
Mm-hmm.
She said something like, oh yeah, you know, nice try type of thing. Like mm-hmm. she was so unfazed. She was already like, it was, I feel like it was a foreshadowing that like, you know what? She's going to be able to handle these kids.
Yeah. I think it was very apparent that like, as an audience, you're like, oh, okay, like she's going to be good at this job. She knows what she's doing. Like, obviously her, she doesn't have any past experience and she wasn't brought through the nanny agency.
Yeah.
But the reason why she's going to get the job is because she's not going to be thrown off by these kids like the other nannies were.
Exactly. And even Brighton saying, you know, like his bitterness saying, you know, they're problem children. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, you know, I feel like every kid sometimes feels like that, you know, mm-hmm. oh, like maybe I'm, you know, but there's some kids that really don't care. They're like, whatever. But I think, you know, him mentioning that was like an extra, extra push that like, this is going to be a job.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a job for her.
So the only adult female influence in the Sheffield's household is Cece, Maxwell's business associate, who obviously is attracted to Maxwell, but not his children. And she's like, these children can't be running loose through the party. Not that I don't love them. Like, she's just so apparent that she doesn't like the children. And then once in a while, she'd be like, oh, but, like, in a good way. Like,
I mean, it's crazy because, you know, it, like, you, You can obviously tell, you know, she doesn't care about them. Mm-hmm. But imagine, like, you know, there's even now there's like a stigma to like, oh, you know, dating someone with kids, or if you have children and you're dating, you're like, the first thing you think about is, I have a kid, mm-hmm. you know, and like, is anyone gonna want me? Is anyone, you know? But I love seeing stories of like blended families and like people finding love, and their significant other, you know, takes that child too.
Yeah,
you know, and that's very rare, and sometimes that's how you know, like, oh, maybe I have a good one, because he doesn't only just care about me, he cares about my kids, you know. Yeah. So I thought that was, yeah, that was really interesting how they just put her, and I mean, she's so cold, my mm-hmm. god, I mean, I felt the ice off her face. I like, I mean, their dynamic too, I mean, you could tell she really likes Sheffield, so her eyes are only for him.
It's just really ridiculous because, you know, if you don't like kids, that's fine. Just don't date someone with kids. You know, go find someone else who wants to roll their eyes at children just as much as you like to do it.
Exactly. That would work out perfectly. I think, honestly, I mean, they work together, obviously, mm-hmm. right? So is she like the right-hand man type of person, or...
You know, it does give the the impression that Sheffield is above her. And that she's kind of like an assistant. I don't know. I guess they say that she's the business associate. But I don't know.
She's... Yeah. So obviously they've... I mean, they're not...
So maybe they are equal?
Yeah. I mean, I do love that she's this, you know, power woman as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, that's definitely a positive side with her. Where she's like, I'm a woman in this, you know, corporate world. Which, you know... could be hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that she's a symbol of that, you know, she's tough and, you know, and she can just roll with the boys as well. Yeah. And I think she gets a little, you know, aggressive and, you know, forward. But I love how she just, she's this person who's crushing on Sheffield, and then mm-hmm. Fran comes in and just, ooh, like their dynamic together. Was interesting for me too.
So Niall's favorite pastime is tormenting Cece, although Maxwell quickly realizes Fran is not a nanny. He hires her anyway on a temporary basis, as the nanny agency is unable to send anyone else immediately. So she's writing her oh, that's what it was, when she's doing the like stabbing thing with the ketchup. She's like writing her resume in lipstick, and she's like, I think she's like, do you have a pen? Like, he's over here pretending that he's like bleeding. She's like, do you have a pen?
That's amazing how observant you are, because like, there are things I did not notice. Like mm-hmm. I was just looking at this kid on the floor, and then how, oh, okay. It's just amazing though. You notice the details.
Well, I mean, it definitely is hard to pick up on a lot of it because it is very fast. Yeah. It's that, like, it's almost kind of that Gilmore Girls fast, or their new show with the same Amy Sherman Palladino does The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, they shove a lot in 20 minutes or however long this
they episode really, was. Honestly, they really did. It was like a whole, I mean, I love that it's a whole story in 20 minutes. I mean, back then... You know, you had commercials too.
Mm-hmm.
So technically it would have been what, 30 minutes?
Like, yeah.
You know, with the commercials. But yeah, I did not notice all those details. So I'm glad we're rewatching it.
And how is she writing a resume out of lipstick? And when she hands it over, she's not even, like, I feel like I would be nervous. I'm like, yes, this is like my last resort, and this is what I have to do because I don't have a pen right now. But I'm not, when I'm handing it over, I'm like nervous of how his reaction will be. And she's like, yeah, here.
And you know what? I feel like that's very relatable too, because, I mean, let's face it, it's nerve-wracking to try to get a job, mm-hmm. to try to get, you know, work and then impress someone. But then you could tell that that's how confident she is, you know, with herself, that like, you know, like she's just, I'm going to just get this, you know, I'll get this job. And oh, there's, I'm doing this on a whim with the lipstick. It's almost like a symbolism for like, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to use what I have. And these are the tools that I have. And she's thinking quick. And mm-hmm. I think that's going to come in handy, obviously, with her watching these three kids or taking care of them. She's going to have to think fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a nice little touch that they did. So I'm glad you caught that, and I can kind of like translate it now, you know, because I think that's really an important piece too, just to see how clever she is. I mean, yeah. Me having kids, you really do have to think fast, and like you really do have to improvise a lot of things sometimes, and you know, it's like insane. I feel like mothers don't get enough credit. They should have Mother's Day like 3 times a year or something, maybe more, every month, just to celebrate them. And then we get gifts and everything, because it's just, and obviously, you know, the single dads and stuff like that, just the parent period, juggling multiple kids, mm-hmm. let alone, you know, one. So, I love that it's showing, like, she can think fast, and obviously she's confident. I love how confident she is. So she was like, I don't care. This is my resume.
And so on the resume, a reference, he reads as the Queen Mother. And she goes, no, it's my mother from Queens. I thought that was really cute.
That was clever.
So Fran ends up not being your traditional nanny. She first decides that she will come to breakfast in her robe and eat with the family. But the biggest decision she makes is that she and the kids will crash Maxwell's upcoming investors party at the house. So the reference to the nanny eating in the kitchen is just like, it really, I was like, but why? Like this nanny is like here to take care of the kids and like really, like she has to have a good bond with the kids to be able to like control them and like basically parent them when he's not around. So I was like, why would the nanny not eat with the kids? Like, I feel like that's just like something that shouldn't be taboo.
Or like, wouldn't they be like running around or like just supporting them? Like, how does that work? Like, if you're a nanny, or if there's, you know, if you guys, you know, have any feedback, you know, feel free to go on our Instagram and let us know how you feel, or even message us if you have to. How does it work? Like, if you're a nanny, do you, you know, while the kids are eating, depending on how old they are, do you eat with them? Do you sit, you know, do you run around after them? Or you just kind of stand there and wait for them to give a command or make sure they eat? Obviously, if it's a little child, you want to make sure they eat. Like, what do you do? Like,
I feel like this mindset is kind of like, it's set around a family that, you know, is trying to pretend like they're not just giving all the responsibility to the nanny. And so when they're having breakfast and Mr. Sheffield's there and he's dining with his kids, the nanny would typically be in the kitchen. So it's like, oh, here I have this representation in my brain that like, oh, this is my family, and you know, I'm not like disassociated from them, which a lot of times these rich families who have nannies are.
Yeah, and sometimes the nanny becomes like their second parent or third parent, or, you know, however it is, they become another guardian, another parent that they, you know, consult. I mean, I had a nanny when I was young. I mean, we weren't rich by all means, but in the Philippines, you know, if you're middle class and up, you know, you can have a nanny, you know, a live-in at that. Mm-hmm. And I remember being, I don't know, I think I'm a good person now, but back then it was like I was such a horrible kid, and I had one nanny that ran away.
Like, you legit, did tell me about that, yeah.
Ran away, took their stuff and left.
You were like Mr. Sheffield's kids. Yeah. You made the nannies run away.
Yeah, basically that's what it was. And it's like, I can't even imagine how hard it is, you know, for a stranger to love these children and like take care of them. So yeah, kudos to Fran.
Well, she does a great job of not just being like, oh, well, you know, I'm taking care of your kids. She's like, I want you to be, like, she puts a lot of effort in trying to, like, mesh the two. She's like, I'm going to take care of your kids, but any opportunity that you can be a part of this family, I'm going to, you know, push forward with that.
And I love that she said together. Like, I feel, oh my God, I'm yawning. That drink is kicking in. But the, you know, honestly, the togetherness factor, I love that they were doing the togetherness kind of message. And even her saying, you know, we're family. And she's already kind of like knowing their personalities already. And she's so natural. And honestly, she gives off that Jewish mom vibes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I love it. Who doesn't love a Jewish mom, mm-hmm. right? Shout out to the Jewish moms.
So she's talking about Porche di Pruno, which is really delicious, but also is a natural digestive. That would definitely make me laugh. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, because it's...
And she's saying that Shiksas don't know food. They don't know how to order food. She's going to have to order the food for the party. And Mr. Sheffield's obviously saying, like, oh, you know, it's already taken care of. And then he says, well, what's a Shiksa? Is it like a tchotchka? And she says, well, it's like a tchotchka, but it's more expensive. Because she's referencing Cece being a gold digger.
Yeah.
And she's calling her a Shiksa. So, well, I don't know if it was a gold digger or, like, a girlfriend. You know, either way, yeah. Like, it's someone... She's referencing to be like, well, you know, I want things.
Yeah. I mean, that would be another good feedback for our listeners. Like, you guys can message us, comment, whatever. You know, let us know your thoughts. Because, you know, I do love the Jewish mom vibes. I love the terms. But I'm not completely clear on it.
Yeah, what's a shiksa?
A shiksa.
Let me know what you think a shiksa is.
Just maybe like a woman or something? Or just...
And then she's back at the bridal shop with her best friend, and she's showing her pictures of Mr. Sheffield, and she goes, it's a head of hair. And then Nanny Fine Fran says, it's all his. So I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, I thought that was really cute too. And honestly, I love how she already, like what I said before, she knew the kids' personalities already. She's like, oh, this one... You know, doesn't have a personality. That one, you know, has
multiple.
And then the other one, what did she say about Brighton?
Well, she got distracted because she was like, well, where's Brighton? And then he goes, are these models anatomically correct? She's like, why do you care? You're 10 years old. Can't you just be normal?
I think, honestly, I love the part too when he was being mean to the eldest one is Grace, Maggie.
Maggie.
Yeah, he was, oh my God, now this is going to be a thing. So, when she said that, you know, she was saying, you know, kind
be
of...
Be nice to your sister.
Yeah, be nice to her sister, because when your dad is sick and old and sick or something, you know, he's going to have to live with her or something like that. And I like that, because you know what? It's true. They always say the daughter usually takes the parents.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, that was kind of interesting to me.
So having the kids at the party ends up being a windfall as the investors love them. That's an interesting word. Anyways, however, Fran gets in the doghouse when Maxwell catches Maggie in the embrace of the party waiter who gives her first kiss.
And I thought that was kind of cute how... But it's just like you picked an open door by your dad's office.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just like an interesting spot. But I love, obviously, it's a sitcom and there's one way to face where the camera is. So it had to be very visible, but it's just so obvious.
It was very obvious. And I thought it was unrealistic that, like, if I'm making out with someone and I don't want my dad to see... You're like listening. You're
yes.
like listening out. You're like constantly checking. You're like, and so when he walks in and I'm like, these two don't hear him walking into this office.
I would have honestly preferred them to be like, okay, maybe the party was going on and then Fran, you know, was doing stuff and then the kids are there and then they go maybe into his office or they take a minute to go outside. You know, maybe on the balcony, wherever they are, and they just see these two making out. I feel like I would have preferred that. But him going in his office, and then the patio door is, like, wide open, and then he just goes in the drawer to, like, put something in there, the check, and then he just happens to look up from his desk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely wasn't the most believable situation, but it was obviously created just to be funny.
Yeah, and obviously it had to be super obvious and super visible, so... I can get that.
Did you clock that Cece was admitting to plastic surgery?
No.
Because she points across the room and she's like, oh, look at her. She looks great, right? Obviously, it's my plastic surgeon because it was a good job. And I was like, well, what did you get? What did she get done? Do you think it was a nose job?
You know what? Probably. I don't think it was a boobs. It wasn't like standing out for me. But I mean, it could have been... Yeah, most likely a nose job or an eyebrow lift or something.
Because, yeah, I would think facial.
Yeah, something facial. And honestly, I have to say I love when, I forgot to mention that part when Fran walks down with the sequin dress.
Oh, the red dress.
Is it? It's crazy. It looked magenta and or like hot pink to me. I don't know if my eyeballs are just broken or what, but I was like, oh my God, I love her pink dress. But obviously the guy, the pianist, was singing, you know, a song and said red, you know, that she was wearing red.
Yeah.
And everyone's making an emphasis on red. So I was like, okay, it's red. It's just, I don't know. I was like, my eyeballs were seeing pink. But that was a beautiful dress. I love her entrance. Mm-hmm. It's almost like it's already kind of... And Cece just, you know, wearing her suit and being called handsome.
Yeah.
It was... That was, like, interesting for me, too. But I love that Fran kind of had her entrance. So yeah. It's kind of like she's the it woman.
He goes, I said you were nice. No, you said I was handsome. And she gets all butthurt about it. And there's something that's very prominent with Niles, and this is the type of character that usually is snobby towards the like low income nanny, rather than being like against Cece, who's like stuck up and she's obviously has money. And I love that Niles doesn't like Cece, but he's very friendly with Fran. It's like the opposite of what you would typically get out of a TV show or movie with this setup. You know?
Yeah, that's true. Because, like, he could easily just say, oh, you know, she's a nanny or something. Or, like, frown upon it or something like that. But somehow, I love that they kind of actually, they become a team.
Yeah. Like, so instantly.
Yeah, immediately. Honestly, their dynamic is very similar to ours. Mm-hmm. And I love it because she's just, I mean, even his little quick sarcasm, you know, kind of comments... to Cece and kind of takes a little jabs at her. I love it because you just know she's maybe miserable or something and she just acts the way she does. And I feel like she represents, you know, a lot of the challenges and people that we face, you know, now.
So you recognize the party waiter very quickly, Mr. James Marsden, I believe is how you pronounce it.
God, he's so cute.
He's in Hairspray. He's an X-Men, he's an Enchanted, I believe he's a Prince in Enchanted, an X-Men, he's Cyclops, and Hairspray, I think he's the announcer guy from the TV show.
Yeah.
And then he is someone in Superman Returns. I am not a superhero type of movie person, so I wouldn't know at all. But he's definitely, like, a well-known actor. His face is very recognizable, and he's so little and young.
I know,
back in 1993.
Oh my God, he's a little hottie totty, and like I just, even now he's a hottie, so I couldn't forget that. Even though it was so brief, I was like I recognize that guy.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Sheffield gets all butthurt about the kiss and like chases them out into the party room where Fran is like on her side, and she goes, well, when I was 14. Well, maybe this isn't the time for that story.
I can't even remember. I don't think I did. 14 is like freshman year in high school, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you date that young?
I was dating girls at that point in time. I actually didn't come out until my senior year, and I didn't start thinking and realizing that I was attracted to men until 10th grade. So I was, you know, I was just trying to make the straight thing happened, I guess, back in the freshman year. That was the first time I ever had alcohol.
Honestly, New Year's Eve. There were times when I, you know, I think that's the age when you, I mean, it's, you know, it's part of puberty and you're starting to just become yourself and start to know what you wanted. And I think in my school, there was just a plethora of either girls that were like, oh, I'm bi, oh, I'm a lesbian. But you don't know if it was really true, or even till this day, you're like, oh, people went back and forth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even me, I'm pretty sure I was either bi or lesbian at some point, you know, in high school. But obviously, you know, I'm married to a guy now, but it's just, it's kind of, you know, it's funny how you discover that around that age. I don't think I even dated guys in high school. I think I dated guys that were like in early 20s, you know, but that was, that was another thing.
Another oh my thing. God. So Maxwell and Fran argue specifically about how Maggie should be raised in her formative teenage years. Maxwell promptly fires Fran over this incident. And then she says, "You can't fire me. I quit. Never mind. You're firing me because I want unemployment." She says that again.
You know what? I love that because that is smart. Fran, you know, being the mom figure, I love that. And she was defending Grace. Like, that's sometimes that's what you need, a contrast in parenting. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I love that they had a contrast already mm-hmm. and they were able to, like, deliver that in just a few minutes even. Because, you know, that's what, I keep saying Grace. That's what Maggie needs. Damn it.
Niles comes in and he sticks up for Fran. He asks him, "Oh, do you think I was overreacting?" And he was like, straight up, yes. Like, he's not beating around the bush. He's yeah. like, "If you're gonna ask me, I'm gonna be 100% honest." He gives him that sandwich and says that Fran made it and was it just what you needed? And he's like, "You're not talking about the sandwich, are you?" And he goes, "No, sir, I am not." So I thought that was really nice. He's just so direct about, like, he was wrong. Fran is great for this house. She is what is needed for this family at this time.
And you know what? He did it in such a way. I wish we can resolve things or open people's eyes.
With a sandwich?
Yeah, with a sandwich. And just that clever. I honestly feel like you do that to me. Because mm-hmm. I can be worked up about something. And then you answer me with not a thought, but you're like a question. Like, mm-hmm. do you feel like? And then sometimes we just have to occur. It has to occur, you know, within ourselves. Like, you kind of have to, like, realize it. Mm-hmm. Because I think someone else giving you advice, you know, yeah, it helps. But then sometimes people give unsolicited advice or just, you know, "I didn't want that. No mm-hmm. thanks." Or sometimes I don't even want you know, the solution. I don't want advice. I just want someone to listen. Yeah. But sometimes I think that was a great technique for Niles to just ask that. And yeah. he just kind of, and you know, a way to a man's heart is through his stomach, obviously. I think with mm-hmm. anyone, I mean, you know, you feed me and you can cook, that's plus. So I think the food part and relating it with Fran and what that household needed was very, very clever also.
I didn't really realize at the time, but now that we're talking about it, that's like the transition that goes from his study to Fran's mom's house. So Fran yeah. takes solace at her mom's house. Sylvia, being your typical Jewish mother who loves her food, and she's like, "You want some malamas?" And she says, "Food is forever." And Sylvia's definitely reminding me of a drag queen that I used to know back in the day, whose name was Sylvia. Looked very similar to what she looks like. The whole hair, the outfit is very Sylvia.
I love it. Honestly, throughout the whole thing, I love the big hair. Mm-hmm. Honestly, even Fran's, you know, sequin dress, you know, when she walked down the stairs, I feel like that was very RuPaul. Mm-hmm. I feel like RuPaul would have that dress. And honestly, any fabulous, you know, drag queen. But I love that she said food is forever, because it's true. Like, when you're, like, you know, distraught or, like, upset, you know, you want to go to your mom's house and, you know, eat, or your friend's house and, you know, have a snack and just talk and chat. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had a Malamar in a long time.
Yeah, it's definitely been a while.
That brought me back. So if there's anyone out there that has access to this stuff,
I saw a bunch of, like, generic uh-huh. Malamars. But where? If you go on Amazon, the actual, like, Malamars, there's, like, a pack of 12 for $160-something dollars. I was like, no one sells this anymore. Like, that was the only thing that was available that I could find. And it was, like, this ridiculous amount of money.
How much was it?
160-something for a pack of 12. Yeah, it's a pack of 12. But I feel like Malamars, you used to get them at the dollar store.
Yeah. I remember there was a plethora of it. Like, just a couple years ago, I could have sworn. And I was like, "Oh, this is so good." And I just took them for granted. I bought, I think, like, a box. And I said, "Oh, I'll just come back." And now I don't know where they are. And I just, like, I need some. I need it.
So Fran's retreat back to Queens is short-lived, as Maxwell quickly realizes that Fran may have been right. Perhaps Fran Fine will have a life at the Sheffields household after all. And this is when he goes to the mom's house and sees plastic on the furniture. And he's like, "Why is there plastic on the furniture?" She says, "We're saving it for the afterlife."
I actually caved. It's funny because I actually caved and put plastic on my dining room table. And I said, oh my gosh, am I turning into one of those moms?
Yeah. Did you grow up with anyone that had plastic everywhere?
Oh my God. Absolutely. I think, you know, a lot of Filipino households were always just about like, you know, preserving and fixing. I mean, making sure that is like not used. Like, and then I always constantly think like, if we're always protecting these things, these furniture, so it looks good. But then I'm like, when are you ever going to really open it?
Yeah. Well, it's not so it looks good. It's so it doesn't get dirty.
Dirty.
So it constantly looks awkward and weird.
Yeah.
So you don't have... It's easier to clean. Because I guess, like, cleaning a sofa versus wiping the plastic with, like, soda or food that gets on it.
Yeah, that's just to protect it. And then I guess sometimes in my head I'm like, when are we ever going to see it for its true beauty without the plastic and feel it without it? But then again, I have 4 dogs, so yeah, that's right, people, 4. They're Westies, and it's just crazy because I remember buying our couch thinking, oh, well, you know, I think it'll be fine. And then boom, 4 dogs, and it's obliterated. So
I do love that she's at the party earlier, and she's taking photos of the family. And then at the end, when she gets her job back, the mom pops up and she's like, oh, let me take a picture. It's just, it was such a great reference to like how they're similar in some ways.
Oh my gosh. That was literally the next thing I was going to say. I was like, you know, I literally even just wrote it down. Just like, you clearly know where she came from and who she, you know, who she gets her personality from. And I love that because even just that brief, honestly, I wish I had more of Sylvia. Like, honestly, I love her. She's a great comic relief. I mean, Fran is already a great comic relief, but my gosh, you know, it's almost similar to how me and my mom are. We're very close and I go to her for solace. Shout out, mom. And she's, and she's like, you know, she's there for comfort. And at the same time, she's also... kind of, she made a comment to Fran about something. I can't remember. But it was like, you know, just being motherly, basically. Like, oh, you know, reminders and things like that. But I do love the picture. And it's crazy because I love to take pictures too. And my mom, she'll take pictures of everything. But I think that was one of my favorite parts. You're absolutely right. Like, it just showed how much they are so similar.
So we're going to do a couple different things at the end of each episode. We're going to do one thing called Bestie of the Week. And I'm going to say my Bestie of the Week is Sylvia with the Malamars.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
She's definitely my favorite character this episode. I think what we should do is try to, each season, we can't repeat someone.
Yeah.
So if you're going to pick Fran or you're going to pick Niles, like, you can only do it once within that season.
For like ever. Honestly, for me, I feel like Fran is my bestie of the week. Of the week, because she's like what the world needs sometimes. And honestly, I'm not, you know, I'm not blowing smoke up my ass, but I feel like I can relate to her a lot. And I feel like she's a little bit of my spirit animal because I don't really, did I just call her an animal? No, she's my spirit person or whatever it is. Because she's just like, she's just out there and she's just so confident. And honestly, you would think she had $1 million with the way she dressed and the way she, you know, she acted. She's just very confident. And honestly, she's a symbol of even her showing, you know, being an example for the girls, I think, you know, and showing Maggie the ropes or at least, you know, giving the makeover. Who doesn't love like a little makeover, you know? So, I don't think we even mentioned that with Maggie, you know, coming down at, like, you know, she went from looking a certain way in the beginning of the show to like near the end of the show or the middle of the show. And she's like this woman and it's already like, look at her. Like she's only been in the house. Well, Fran has only been in the house for such a short period of time and look at the difference that she's already making.
Yeah.
So I love that. So I honestly, she's what the world needs. Just someone funny and just loving and caring and just making, she's just putting herself in there.
So the other thing that we're going to do is most quotable quip. And I'm going to say mine for this episode is, I'm from Flushing. There is nothing these kids could throw at me that I haven't seen before, except maybe their trust funds. That was such a good line. Fran threw that out, and I was like, that's definitely going to be my most quotable quip.
I think for me, my favorite was when they were in the shop looking for clothes for the kids. And Fran says to Brighton, you know, your father's going to get sick and old one day and you'll want him to live with her. And I think that was really, really clever. Because honestly, mm-hmm. it's like a way to like just scare the crap out of him. Like, hey, you know, be nice to your sister because she's going to take your dad
one yeah, day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So fashion favorite, my fashion favorite is the red dress. Is yours the pink dress?
Yeah, I love the sequin pink dress. And it's crazy because I was like, is that pink or red? Is it pink or red?
I think it was red.
I honestly want to go with the red because I just want to.
It matches the song.
Yeah, exactly. Because it matches the song. So again, my Virgo like OCD ways are just like, okay, that because the song said red. Why would they say red if she was wearing pink, right? Mm-hmm. But really, in my mind, it was pink. But that was my favorite. The red pink sequin dress.
So, and then finally, we're going to do an episode rating. We're not going to do stars. We're going to do Mr. Sheffield. So I would say this episode was 5 out of 5 Mr. Sheffields for me.
For me, it was the same. It was 5 out of 5. It captured everything that I would have wanted to see in a sitcom like that, where, you know, it's very relatable too. Just raising kids, you know, or being a single person, losing your job, going through a breakup, and then having to find this job that actually you don't know anything about. And I've been through that in my humble beginnings, and I'm like always finding myself throwing myself into these things. I mean, I did makeup for weddings, you know, and it's crazy, not a lot of people know that about me. And it just, I remember being there at the trial, being there at the actual wedding, passing the trial, and then doing the wedding. It was like nerve-wracking, and it's so relatable. Like, how do we get ourselves in these situations? And then let alone raising kids or being a nanny and being around all these new people, and let alone living with them. So that was really interesting for me, and I love that. And it had, you know, family and togetherness too. That was great.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a great pilot and gets you in love with the show right off the bat. So that's pretty much our show. You can follow us on TikTok and Instagram at the Nanny and Niles Pod. You can email us at the Nanny and Niles Pod at gmail.com. And you can see me personally at Dylan Gaiman. And you can see Trix Mix at Trix Mix 910.
Yes, on Instagram, people. Follow us, you know, see what we're about, and let us know how you feel about our first podcast. We'd love to hear your thoughts. If you have any ideas or thoughts about, you know, what we're doing, let us know, because maybe we can include it in the next podcast.
Well, bye-bye now.
Ta-ta.